More like slow start today, but we're still here. I'm still Digital Dave.
And I'm Fast Eddie, and I want my bee back.
Your bee?
Bee. We put the bee in subtle.
Oh.
You didn't get that?
I thought we put the F in onions.
You know what? I think you've landed with the wheels up again.
Again. I only have one.
Yeah. Well, it's not working.
And with us. Go ahead. You go ahead.
All right.
Do it. Come on.
With us today from NASA, we have Darrell Waller and Jim Less. How you doing, guys?
Good morning.
Very well.
NASA is good.
NASA is terrific.
So, what are you guys doing with NASA? I mean, you were just saying something that was very interesting in the lobby. We want to talk about airplanes because everybody thinks we do space only, and that's not true.
Absolutely. The first A in NASA stands for aeronautics, and that is the study of airplanes.
That's true, and what they do and trying to make them do it better.
Absolutely.
And NASA's been involved in a lot of aeronautical research.
Pretty much all of it, huh?
The X-15 comes to mind.
Absolutely. Hypersonic rocket plane back in the 60s.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, they're still messing around with that kind of thing. Well, maybe that's more military than you guys, but you never know. Fast way to get the mail.
Absolutely. One of the big areas of research we have right now is supersonics.
Right.
And the X-59 is the next X-plane coming along, not as fast as the X-15, but designed to go supersonic, cruise supersonic, without a loud sonic boom.
Now, let's also say, you said something there, cruise supersonic. That means no afterburners during supersonic flight, right? None required.
The X-59 is going to need the afterburner.
Okay. So it's not a true super cruise.
It's not a super cruise, but it's really about the sonic boom.
Right.
We're trying to turn that into a sonic thump.
Well, I like that idea. Although a good sonic boom once in a while, you know.
The rest of the public doesn't always agree with that.
Yeah, especially at 2 a.m. when you're trying to sleep.
Yeah.
Yeah, sonic booms can be disruptive. They rattle the windows. They rattle the ceiling tiles. They wake sleeping babies. Set the dogs to barking. Set off car alarms.
Oh, wow. That must be fun. Fly down, yeah. Past some stadium and set off all the car alarms.
And so if you're cruising supersonic, a lot of people don't realize this. They think the sonic boom is only when you first go supersonic. It's actually attached. It's a shockwave attached to the aircraft, and everywhere you go, you're taking that sonic boom.
Okay, explain exactly that. Shockwave attached to the aircraft. What do you mean?
It's just a very subtle pressure change, and sometimes you can see pictures where you sort of see the shockwave. We're also doing research to try to capture the pictures of shockwaves in flight. But it's just a very subtle pressure change. Sound is just a change in pressure. When we speak, we vibrate the air. The pressure change of a sonic boom is really only about the difference between going up two flights of stairs.
Really?
But it happens so quickly that it sounds like a loud boom, rattles the windows, as I said. People will jump. You can sometimes even feel it. You hear it and you feel it in your chest, too, if it's a pretty powerful one. And the carpet, we talk about the boom carpet. When you're cruising supersonic up to about 50 miles wide, 25 on each side of your ground track, people are going to hear that boom. And if we had airliners crossing the country every day, anybody in that carpet is going to hear
a lot of booms. Would get annoying pretty quickly.
Absolutely. And that's why, since I think it was the 70s, the FAA has prohibited civil supersonic flight over land. And most countries around the world have the same kind of restriction.
So everybody's watching your research closely.
So we think we're going to be able to quiet the boom enough that it won't be objectionable. We're going to go out and fly eventually over various communities around the country and do surveys of the population and find out what people think.
Okay. Now, this begs the question. Are you going to tell the people ahead of time that this is coming, or are
absolutely.
You going to wait for the 911 calls?
No, in fact, we're going to tell the people. We're going to look for volunteers, and we're going to send them a download for an app for their mobile devices for the most part, and they will be there ready. They may not know exactly when the boom is coming on a given day, but they're kind of supposed to be listening, and then if they hear it, they're going to rate it on their cell phone app.
I'm actually surprised that you didn't try and use the mic to record the pressure spike as it went by. The phones probably aren't sensitive enough to do that.
We are going to have teams of people, large teams of people on the ground setting up different. It's more than just a microphone. They've got whole ground stations. It looks like a little weather station almost, but they'll set those up around the area that we're going to be flying over, capturing all that data, because then you want to be able to correlate the actual sound of the boom on that given day with what people think.
I gotcha.
Weather has a big
right
impact.
I mean, cloud cover is going to reflect the sound energy down, right?
It's going to help. We're going to be above the clouds. So sometimes a thick layer of clouds will really dampen out the sonic boom.
Mm-hmm.
Pressure gradients, temperature gradients, humidity, turbulence, all these things make a difference. And we've been doing a lot of research at NASA, at least for the last 10 to 15 years, trying to characterize those things, getting a better understanding of what conditions are bad, what conditions are good. There's some days, if you're not going too fast, but still supersonic, the boom won't even reach the ground.
Oh, interesting. Interesting. So you got enough attenuation.
Yeah, but that's pretty rare, and you're only going slightly supersonic, so that's not the big speed jump. We're looking for a plane that can go almost twice as fast as a conventional airliner.
Okay.
Trying to cut travel time in half.
Right. So you're not quite Mach 2, but you're up way up above Mach 1.
Yeah, we're looking at 1.4, 1.5
okay.
for the X-59.
Nice.
How far away is the X-59 from flying?
We are trying to get it airborne by the end of the year.
Wow.
Nice. This year.
Now that's, yeah, you're going to have to evaluate its normal flight characteristics before you push it supersonic.
Absolutely. It's a three-phase project. The first phase, cleverly called phase one.
Good of them to think of that, yeah.
Is just getting the aircraft airborne, checking out all the systems, checking out the handling qualities and performance, and making sure it's safe to fly throughout its envelope.
Now, is it a clean sheet design, or did you guys drag something out of the boneyard and modify it?
It's a clean sheet design, but like most X planes, we call it a Frankenjet. We take parts from a lot of other things. It's the jet engine from a Super Hornet. It's a GE414. We've got F-16 landing gear on it. The cockpit is basically the rear cockpit of a T-38. That's an Air Force trainer.
Right.
The canopy, the ejection seat, all come from there.
Okay, so it's actually a lot smaller than I'm envisioning.
It's about 100 feet long and with a 30-foot wingspan.
Okay, wow.
It's a lawn dart.
Yeah.
It is. So that's the way we're quieting the boom, basically. The shaping is very important. It's not just making it long and skinny, but a long, skinny nose is definitely a big part of the design.
You want to move the air gently, because when you move it quickly, that's what creates the shockwave.
Mm-hmm.
And you push it out of the way.
Absolutely.
You said long, skinny nose. You want to bet somebody nicknames the airplane Pinocchio?
There's been discussion, but no, we're not going with that. So we're calling
not yet.
We're calling it the X-59.
Okay, until they find out it lied about the specifications. what's the coffee maker out of? What airplane? 747?
Yeah, it's a single-seat aircraft.
Yeah.
It's just a demonstrator.
Right.
It's not expected to carry passengers. This is a one-of-a-kind airplane to prove the point. We hope to fly it for years, though, gather a lot of data to improve the ability to design future quiet supersonic aircraft.
Okay, and you're not talking long-duration flight at this point in time.
This aircraft will be about an hour and 20 minutes.
Right. That's enough.
Yeah.
That'll make enough of a boom to piss people off.
Some days it doesn't take much.
Our hope is that people don't even hear us.
Now, your flight testing is going to start out at Mojave?
The aircraft's being built by the Lockheed Skunk Works at Palmdale, mm-hmm. which is just down the road from Edwards Air Force Base. The initial flights will be out of Palmdale. That way, if they need to work issues with the systems, they've got the folks who built it right there to take care of it. But we hope after about 10 to 12 flights, we move it up to Edwards Air Force Base. And that's where I work. The Armstrong Flight Research Center is a NASA center. We do most of the flying in NASA, and we're located on Edwards Air Force Base.
Well, we drove through there last year, and it's like, wow, there's really not much here.
But it's a good place to test airplanes.
It's got to be an amazing place to fly. There's no such thing as non-flying weather.
It's rare.
Yeah.
Yeah, we see clouds or rain or something, and we just decide, okay, we'll wait another day because there's so many good days to fly.
Right. And you're like, what's that falling out of the sky?
It's also great. The airfield is in a restricted area.
Mm-hmm.
So we take off. Most days we take off VFR, and just go where we want, basically.
Nice.
Out into the airspace, as long as we stay in the restricted area.
Now, what altitudes are you going to be flying this at? 10,000, 20,000?
Way higher than that. We're shooting for 54 or 55,000.
Wow.
As the design condition.
Okay, so you're going to take it up to that. Even this demonstrator is going to be flying that high.
Yes. For a fuel efficiency, for minimizing the sonic boom on the ground, we want to be up high.
Okay.
We may check out the aircraft as high as 60,000 feet, but...
Nice. Curvature of the Earth stuff.
You should be able to see it a little bit.
Yeah, there. Yeah.
And, of course, the pilot of this aircraft is going to be in a spacesuit at 60,000 feet.
It's not going to be a spacesuit. It's going to be a partial pressure suit.
Okay.
Basically, there's another system we've borrowed from someone else. The F-22 pilots wear something like that because they fly above 50,000 feet as well.
Shh. Supposed to tell us that. Anyway,
I'm not saying how high.
But. Right. Where are you on the airfield here today?
We're in the NASA tent, NASA pavilion. I don't know what.
Yeah,
we're
it's
calling
a pavilion.
It. It's
yeah.
a pavilion. It's a pretty big tent. It's it's that way. I'm pointing.
Nobody can see me pointing on the radio,
huh?
Northeast, I guess, of the tower.
Yeah,
the control tower.
This way, northwest.
No, northwest. You're right.
Northwest.
Pennsylvania can't tell east from west.
I can't tell either.
Anyway, I want to thank you for joining us. This has been good. I'd love to hang out at Mojave during the testing just to hear it. Just to hear it. Because I know you're not going to fly it over Philly. It's too...
Who knows?
Yeah, it'd be nice. Call me if you do. This is Digital Dave.
And I'm Fast Eddie. And this is EAA Radio.